The Jedi Order had migrated from Tython and survived the calamities of the First and Second Great Schisms, which led to the birth of their interminable rivals, the Sith. Wars had broken out, and traitorous Jedi had turned away from the light, and the Republic had ingratiated itself with the Jedi, who had become their sworn protector and allies. By the time of the Mandalorian Wars, the Jedi Order was thousands of years old, held numerous schools and temples across a plethora of worlds, but called the planet Ossus its home, until its destruction during the Great Sith Wars. Ravaged by the undulated waves of a supernova, the Jedi Order was forced to relocate to one of their existing temples on Coruscant, officially becoming the heart of the Jedi. Many artifacts, archives, and relics salvaged from Ossus had found a new home in the Jedi Temple. A permanent Jedi High Council of 12 sitting members was formed, with a series of smaller councils overseeing regional praxiums and institutions that would report to the High Council. Despite the reconstitution of the Order from the battering of their past wars and schisms, they had continued to be disunited, for there would arise many more factions, traitors, and discontents from their midst.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
The High Council.
Twelve members sat on the Jedi High Council during the Mandalorian Wars, and not all are known by name. This council would oversee a difficult time of rebuilding and strife. Some members were known to sit on smaller sub-councils and the High Council concurrently. The edicts of the Council were largely peaceful by the time of the Mandalorian Wars, having survived the conflicts of the Third and Fourth Schisms, the Great Sith Wars, and so many regional conflicts. The Council thought it best not to engage with the Mandalorians as they began their plundering of Republic space. This non-interventionist policy would eventually split the Order between those seeking to defend the vulnerable massacred by the Mandalorian menace, and those who thought it was an issue of the Republic, and that further war could forever taint the souls of those who participated in it.
Vandar Tokair. Sitting as the head of the Jedi Enclave on Dantooine, Master Tokair would also be appointed to a seat of the Jedi High Council on Coruscant. Tokair was of the same reptomammalian species as Yoda, but had a browner complexion. He had seen conflict firsthand, participating in the Kakili Reconquista, a Jedi-led, Republic-sanctioned battle to retake Kakilius system after it had been taken over by criminal gangs and pirates. The months-long conflict and devastation lived with Tokair, and although ultimately victorious, made him wary of Warcraft in the future. He had many pupils over the years, including such notables as Zane Carrick, who was accused of killing his fellow Padawans during the knighting ceremony and deemed a fugitive by the Jedi and the Republic. Tokar was one of the few masters who Zane trusted in an attempt to redeem his name. And although skeptical of the allegations of the true killers of the Padawans, he entertained the possibility of Carrick's innocence. During the Mandalorian Wars, Master Tokar, in alignment with the rest of the Council, forbade the Jedi from intervening in the conflict, despite the Council's order. The Revanchist movement led many Jedi into the conflict, with only one ever returning to face official sanctions by the Council after the Battle of Malachor V. Tokar, along with other members of the Council, deemed the Jedi Knight, Mitra Sirik, guilty and sentenced her to exile. Later, during the Jedi Civil War, when he was one of the Jedi Masters who stripped Darth Revan of his memories and voted to reteach the powerful former Jedi the ways of the light side of the Force, he personally assigned the Jedi Knight Bastila Shan to oversee Revan's redemption and arrived with the Republic fleet at the Battle of Rakata Prime. Master Tokar would eventually meet his end along with many other Jedi during a failed gambit led by a fellow Jedi Master and High Council member, Atriss. Tokar was a powerful Jedi Master, dual-wielding lightsaber Shotos, and had the rare ability to sever individuals from the Force entirely. Despite his skill and aptitude, he was killed and consumed by an unknown, powerful shadow in the Force. Lucien Drey.
Lucien sat as part of the Council of Terrace and would eventually be appointed to a position with the High Council of Coruscant, thanks to the machinations of the Secret Jedi Covenant, a sect of Jedi within the larger order. Lucien, having conspired to murder the Padawans of the Taurisian Jedi Enclave, along with his fellow Taurisian Council members, after having a vision that one of the Padawans would usher in a new war and era of Sith dominance. Drey's own mother, Corinda Drey, a former hero of the Great Sith War, had created the Jedi Covenant to safeguard the galaxy from the Sith at any cost, sacrificing anything and anyone to prevent the Sith from reemerging. Their ruthless tactics would never be sanctioned by the High Council, so the Covenant operated in secret, acting as guardians for the Jedi without their knowledge or consent. The Jedi Covenant had been usurped, however, by a failed Jedi Padawan and retainer for the illustrious House Drey, turned dark side acolyte, Hazen. While the other members of the Taurisian Council were killed one by one, Drey earned a semblance of redemption when Hazen's plot was revealed. Drey was thought dead at the end of the incident in confrontation with Hazen, having secretly escaped a destructive bombardment. The rest of the Jedi Council covered up the incident by claiming it was a Mandalorian terror attack, while Lucien Drey was now free to roam the galaxy, unencumbered by his past sins, though condemned to wearing their scars, both psychologically and physically, as he was blinded in the orbital bombardment that had seemingly taken his life. Drey would go on to live in secret and rebuild a new Jedi Covenant with a similar mission to the past one. However, this one would be thoroughly grounded in the light side of the Force and not debase itself with such extreme intrigues as the ones that had led to the deaths of his former compatriots.
Zez Kael. El was a member of the High Council during the Mandalorian Wars and was among those who expelled Mitra Sirik from the Jedi Order. Despite his actions, El harbored sympathy for his apprentice who turned to the dark side during the conflict. He understood the motivations behind the Jedi who chose to join the war, believed that banishing Sirik was a missed opportunity for the Council to explore the reasons behind Jedi departures and assess the potential flaws in their teachings. Following the Jedi Civil War and the First Jedi Purge, El opted for self-imposed exile on Nar Shaddaa, seeking refuge from Sith detection. He would later admit that he believed the Jedi like Mitra Sirik were right for disobeying the Council and fighting in the Mandalorian Wars. After the Jedi Civil War, he distanced himself from the Jedi, renouncing his affiliation with the Order and expressing disappointment in both the Order and his own actions. When he was encountered by the exile, Mitra Sirik, he exhibited signs of depression and even hinted at a desire for death. However, despite his disillusionment, he maintained a sense of loyalty towards the Order. Zez Kael possessed mastery in various advanced force forms and was highly skilled in lightsaber combat. He excelled in disciplines such as Ataru, Shien, Niman, and Juyo, demonstrating his expertise in wielding a double-bladed lightsaber with a distinct violet color. Vruk Lamar.
Vruk Lamar, a male human, held the esteemed position of Jedi Master during various significant events. He served on the Dantooine Jedi Enclave Council and was a member of the Jedi High Council during the Mandalorian Wars, Jedi Civil War, and the Dark Wars. Despite his friendship with fellow council member Vandar Toker, they often disagreed, particularly regarding the controversial decision to readmit Revan into the Jedi Order after his fall to the dark side. Following the conclave at Qatar, where the remaining Jedi awaited the Sith's reemergence, Lamar retreated to Dantooine. Tragically, he met his demise in the ruins of the Jedi Enclave. During his time at the Jedi Enclave on Dantooine, Lamar participated in council meetings on Coruscant. He was part of the Great Hunt, initiated by the High Council to eradicate Tyrantitech, dangerous creatures responsible for killing numerous Jedi. He expressed reservations about assigning a small group of Jedi to the hunt, especially considering the presence of a Keldroma after the actions of Duron's cousin Ulic in the previous war. Lamar once caught Mitra Sirik, still a Jedi student at the time, engaged in a heated argument with his Padawan. He sought disciplinary action from Master Vandar, as Sirik's own master failed to address the issue. Lamar voiced concerns about Sirik's ambition and influence on other Padawans, but Vandar saw her as a natural leader with unique strengths, dismissing Lamar's worries. Another point of disagreement between Lamar and Toker was the selection of 5 Padawan learners to become Jedi Knights. These apprentices, Feln, Kianilla, Rana Tay, Zamar, and Lucien Dre, would eventually form a secret group of the Covenant within the Jedi Order. Lamar had reservations about their choice due to their involvement in the Padawan massacre and Dre's questionable methods, but ultimately agreed to keep a closer eye on them. During the Jedi Civil War, Lamar grew increasingly frustrated with the Council's diminished authority as more Jedi joined Revan's cause. He believed the Council should have taken stronger action against those defying their orders. His perspective on the war shifted dramatically after the Battle of Malachor V, as Revan and Malak returned as Sith Lords. Lamar blamed the Jedi Masters of their fall, particularly Kreia, for her unorthodox teachings. He remained on Dantooine throughout the Jedi Civil War, and became cynical and demanding towards Jedi apprentices, expecting nothing less than perfection. He was known for his stern demeanor, cautious nature, and suspicious outlook. Despite his harsh manner, he showed concern for the safety of Padawans and actively mediated disputes. As a Jedi Master, Lamar was skilled in various advanced force forms and lightsaber combat styles. He mastered Ataru, Shien, Nimen, and Juyo, complemented by aggressive force powers such as Force Lightning. He wielded a green lightsaber and possessed knowledge of techniques like Sever Force, capable of stunning or paralyzing opponents, as well as advanced healing abilities.
Lana Vash. Vash, a human with a strong connection to the Force, received training from the Jedi Order and rose to the rank of Jedi Master before the Mandalorian Wars. She gained a seat on the High Council and was stationed at the newly established Jedi Temple on Coruscant. During this time, she was present when the Council reassigned Jedi Master Zamar, Ranate, Kianilia, Feln, and Lucien Dre, due to their failure in overseeing the Taurus Academy and their inability to prevent the massacre of their Padawans by Zane Carrick, a rogue apprentice. After the Mandalorian Wars and the Jedi Civil War led by Darth Malak and Darth Revan, Master Vash maintained her position on the Council. She presided over the trial of Mitra Surik and made the decision to expel the former Revanchist from the Order. While she condemned Surik for her actions during the war, Vash believed that Surik had changed since then. She disagreed with Master Atris, who claimed that Surik's wound was a sign of dark side corruption. After the trial and Surik's exile, Vash regretted not revealing the true reasons behind her banishment. The Council feared Surik's influence on the others and her ability to form deep connection. When the disbanding of the Order during the Jedi Purge initiated by the Sith Triumvirate, Vash went into hiding and managed to escape Coruscant. Soon after, Master Atris called a gathering on Katar to identify the threat facing the Jedi. Both Vash and Atris chose not to attend, but the planet was devastated by Darth Nihilus, a Dark Lord of the Sith. In the aftermath, she and the surviving masters went into self-imposed exile. Like K'Var and Zez Kael, her fellow council members, Vash believed that Atris had perished on Katar. In reality, she was responsible for leaking information about the gathering to lure out the Sith. Following K'Var's suggestion, they dispersed to different planets and concealed their presence in the Force, hoping that the Sith would assume victory and emerge from the shadows. They sought out locations scarred by war to make it harder for the Sith to detect them, and they thought there was a chance Surik would return to such places in an attempt to reconcile with the past. During her exile, Lana Vash found refuge in the deserted halls of the Sith Academy on Korriban. Eventually, a new Sith Triumvirate discovered her presence, subjugated her to torture, and ultimately killed her. K'Var.
K'Var was also a Jedi Master and member of the High Council during the Mandalorian Wars, Jedi Civil War, and had a close friendship with Mitra Surik, whom he informally trained as a Padawan before the Mandalorian Wars. His early life remains largely unknown, although it is possible that he participated in the Great Sith War. K'Var played a role in skirmishes against the Mandalorians at the beginning of the Mandalorian Wars. The Mandalorians believed he would assume the command of the Republic's war effort once the Jedi joined the conflict, earning him the reputation of the famed Jedi Guardian. However, The Council chose to remain neutral throughout the war, and it was Jedi Knights Revan and Malak who led the rebellious Jedi against them. Many surviving Mandalorians pondered how differently the war would have unfolded had Master K'Var, not Revan, been at the helm. After the war, the High Council judged Syrak for joining Revan's crusade, leading her to banishment. The Council sensed that she carried a wound in the Force and feared the consequences if she stayed within the Order. Little information is available about K'Var's involvement during the Jedi Civil War, except that he fought alongside the Jedi against Darth Malak's forces. Though he was presumed dead at one point during these events, that was far from the truth. Following the Jedi Civil War, K'Var traveled to Onderon and became Queen Talia's advisor. He remained in the shadows of the royal palace, offering cryptic advice. As tensions escalated between Queen Talia and her cousin, General Baklu, K'Var advised Talia to wait until a true threat, Baklu's hidden supporters, revealed themselves. When the Ebon Hawk attempted to land on Izzyz, Baklu's forces, commanded by Colonel Tobin, attacked the ship, sparking a confrontation between Onderonian forces and the Republic. This further escalated the tensions in the city. Through the assistance of the Mandalorians on Duxun, Mitra Syrak, the captain of the Ebon Hawk, arranged a meeting with K'Var via a doctor named Dagon Gent. K'Var met Syrak in the Izzyz Cantina, intending to reveal the full circumstances of her trial. However, Tobin's forces interrupted the meeting, and K'Var incapacitated Tobin's men before fleeing to the palace. Syrak had to fight her way back to her ship against numerous troops. While fleeing, K'Var assured Syrak that he would contact her when possible. Shortly after these events, K'Var sent a message to the Mandalorian Kelborn, instructing him to inform Syrak that he had arranged safe passage for her to return to Onderon. Unfortunately, Syrak received the message too late, as a council of lords, influenced by General Baklu, had already condemned Queen Talia for treason. With the Onderonian military divided between supporting Talia and Baklu, the Onderon civil war erupted, making it unsafe for Syrak to return. Upon hearing the message, Syrak rushed back to Duxun and enlisted the aid of the Mandalorians before using Basilisk war droids to reach Onderon. As Syrak made her way to the palace, K'Var and a group of troops fought against Baklu's supporters, the Sith, and their creatures at the palace gates. K'Var eventually retreated inside the palace, where he coordinated the battle. When Syrak reached him, K'Var directed her to Captain K'Dron. In the throne room, K'Var joined the fight against Vaklu's troops, ensuring Talia and Syrak could confront Baklu. He remained silent when Talia sentenced Baklu to execution, effectively ending the brief yet devastating civil war and preserving Talia's rule. K'Var answered Syrak's inquiries, but was surprised to learn that Atriss had survived the attack on Katar, unaware that she had never attended the conclave. He agreed to join the council on Dantooine once Syrak gathered all the remaining Jedi Masters. K'Var specialized in the Jar-Kai variant of lightsaber combat, mastering forms of Ataru, Shien, Niman, and Juyo. He wielded two blue lightsabers, a standard one in his right hand and a Shoto in his left. K'Var also possessed advanced Force abilities, particularly excelling in Force Stun, capable of stunning multiple targets simultaneously. He could employ Force Wave against enemies and possess skills in the Jedi healing.
Krynda Dre. Hero and veteran of the old Sith Wars, like her husband, Krynda Dre was well regarded amongst the Order in the years before the Mandalorian Wars. At the time, the Jedi had been less stringent around relationships between Jedi, and Kindra, like many before her, was able to take on a spouse and start family, giving birth to a son, one Lucian Dre. Kindra was near human, herself the daughter of a human and Miraluka, born Kindra Hulis, daughter of the Jedi Noab Hulis, before adopting her husband's name. She apprenticed directly under the renowned Jedi Vodo Siosk Bask and Arka Jeth, who also taught her future husband Barrison Dre, the son and heir of an elite family of financiers, before being inducted into the Jedi Order with his servant, Hazan. Kindra became a master, her powerful foresight granting her excellent perception due to her Miraluka heritage. However, she retreated from the Jedi Order during her pregnancy and failed to foresee the fall of her fellow pupil, Exar Kun, to the dark side. During the turbulent times of the Great Sith Wars, Krynda lost many loved ones, including her husband, who was not able to directly involve herself in these affairs, as she had given birth to her son, and by the war's end decided to retreat from the Jedi Order entirely. Deeply affected by her personal losses, and having seen the destruction that the Sith unleashed on the galaxy, Krynda eventually returned to the Order with a revitalized purpose, to forever be vigilant and stop the threat of the Sith from ever emerging again. To this end, she formed a secret sect within the Jedi Order called the Jedi Covenant that would see this new purpose fulfilled. Organizing into subgroups of watch circles, Kindra and her Jedi faction would use foresight and premonition to try to devise when and where the Sith might arise again and intercede before it could happen. Kindra would also use her inherited wealth from the Dre Trust, in no small part kept successful in the markets thanks to Kindra's foresight abilities, and was able to finance operators such as Covenant Shadows, Jedi sent to do the will of the Covenant, including capturing and safeguarding Sith artifacts. Agents like the Jedi Celeste Morn would be sent on these secret missions all across the galaxy. Kindra grew obsessed with this new purpose and had grown distant from her son Lucian, who was raised by droids and Hazan before himself becoming a Jedi in his own right and leading the Covenant from within the Order, Eve as his mother became less and less involved. Retreating almost completely from the affairs of the Jedi Order and being kept in stasis until the horrific revelation of her sons and the First Watch Circle's massacre of their Padawans, and the discovery that Hazan had become an agent of the Sith, infiltrating the very ranks of those who sought their downfall. The Jedi turned on each other, those loyal to the Covenant and those loyal to the Council, in an expert ploy masterminded by Hazan, ruling in Kindra's name, with her unaware until now how her organization's purpose had been exploited so horrifically before succumbing to her age and heartbreak, dying in her son's arm and renouncing her teachings, and the Covenant as the Jedi fought one another in a prelude and foreshadowing for a greater rift that would soon consume the whole Order following the Mandalorian Wars. Atris.
A human female Jedi historian, Atris would eventually become a master and council member shortly before or during the Mandalorian Wars. Atris was extremely conservative and believed that the fall of a former great Jedi, Ulik Keldroma, and Exar Kun were the result of liberal Jedi practices, advocating instead for strict one-master and one-apprentice tutelage and hard age restrictions for Padawans and Jedi beginners. Atriss believed that too many apprentices reduced the responsibility and focus of a master. Should have one pupil at a time to fully invest in and prevent straying from the light. She was also an advocate that Jedi were not to take romantic interests. Using the example of the first great schism caused by the lovers Zendor and Arden Lin. Endorsing the Council's orders to remain out of the Mandalorian Wars, Atriss chafed at the thought that another Jedi she had once admired, and even called friend, Mitra Sirik, had gone to join Revan in the war, which left her conflicted and angry at the Jedi who flagrantly disobeyed the Council. Atriss had a strong black and white picture of morality, and found herself at odds with fellow Jedi historian and maverick, Kreia, who had once been Revan's master. Poisoned by bitterness and her hard and unwavering morality, she was shaken when confronted with the return of Mitra Sirik, who she feared had fallen to the dark side, and demanded a more severe punishment than just exile for the wayward Jedi. Sirik's appearance, defiance, and certainty had shaken Atriss to her core, making her outwardly more staunch in her belief, but internally conflicted and unsure whether the Jedi had been right to sit out the war. Shortly after Revan's return, the following Jedi Civil War, the strength of the Order was vastly depleted. Just as the Jedi attempted to rebuild, something began systematically hunting and wiping out the Jedi, almost completely. In hopes of saving what was left, Atriss called for a convention of Jedi survivors on the planet Katar in the hope she could lure out this phantom threat. Her gambit failed, and the Order was almost exterminated, with Atriss and a handful of surviving Jedi Masters fleeing into hiding. Being a Jedi historian, Atriss salvaged a host of Jedi artifacts, including Sith holocrons, and fled to Telos IV, where she established a new, literal underground Jedi training academy, along with a host of Ichani sisters. Here, she sought to rebuild the Order with her stringent and unbounding views as a backbone of her teachings. In her self-righteousness, she delved into the dark side in an attempt to learn how to better resist it, but soon found herself under its dark influence instead.
Civil War. Despite their growing influence over the galaxy and rapid growth, the Jedi Order during the time of the Republic suffered from instability that led to its eventual downfall. The Jedi were disunited in doctrine and in purpose, which led to bitter infighting shortly after the threat of the Sith was thought vanquished. Though this belief would also prove untrue. In the end, the instability led to irreconcilable rifts, and ultimately, civil war. Though the Sith, in their own way, manipulated the events that would lead to this outcome, the fundamental rifts between the Jedi became an easy and natural exploit that led to their eventual sundering. And yet, despite their factious nature, some very powerful Jedi emerged in this area. From masters such as Vandar Toker to warriors like Revan, the Jedi still managed to shape the direction of the galaxy and the fate of the Old Republic. It was an age of heroes, an age of villains, and an age of strife in the endless cycles of wars across the stars.
Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star-Lord's Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star-Lord's Podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlordspodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Christian.
This is Jordan.
We're currently sitting in the serene fields of Dantooine, overlooking the ruins of the old Jedi Enclave.
Yeah, I just see a pack of Cath hounds walking, running across the horizon.
Yeah, majestic, beautiful, and dangerous.
Yeah, don't want to get too close.
They have Cath rabies.
Yeah.
Yeah, today, this episode was a bit of a mixed bag. It's kind of just a carousel of characters. Characters that will have more, like the episode itself wasn't super linear in its historical telling. Because some of these events that we mentioned, we either haven't talked about in their own episodes yet, things like the Sith Wars, which we will come back around to in the future. But also within like the stories of each of the characters that we mentioned. So it was just kind of an introduction to all these different characters, mostly Jedi Masters of the Order during the time of the Mandalorian Wars, and who were the masters who essentially forbade the Order from getting involved.
These are the other Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we should title this. The other Knights of the Old
Republic. Not the Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
No, I actually kind of like these sort of encyclopedic episodes, especially for like covering important characters, but they're not
important
big enough,
enough
to
own...
do a whole episode. Yeah. But it's still good to cover them all.
And you'll definitely,
although maybe Atriss, maybe a couple other maybe would deserve an episode, but
and for sure they will pop up again.
Yeah,
just because of how big they are and how they intersect with other characters.
Yeah,
it's just a way to lay the groundwork of okay, we know who you are. And how you're going to cross paths with other characters and stories that we're going to tell in the future. So
yeah.
It's an introductory episode. So yeah, so it's good. So for future episodes, when you're listening, you're like, oh, I recognize that name, or I know that person, or I kind of know their backstory or what happened there. So it's just kind of a setup for where we're going next.
Indeed.
Some thoughts, however, we have quite a disunited Jedi Council. Each of these characters seems to have their own agenda, their own, not necessarily malicious. Some are, but some are more hardline and some are like questioning whether or not it was the right thing. They seem just so unsure in their own decision of whether or not to engage in the Mandalorian Wars. Some are tainted by their experience with war. Some are more sympathetic to the cause, but still hold the line with the other Jedi Masters.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I think it's like kind of realistic though.
Yeah.
Like there's never this like uniformity of belief in like any, especially like a political system.
Yeah.
Religious
order.
Yeah. Or a religious order.
You wouldn't have so many factions if you didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's cool. It adds character and nuance to all sides of the factions in this. And it also shows like how those weaknesses can be exploited because, like, really, you'll see how this kind of breaks down in our next few episodes here.
I think, like, in the KOTOR 2 game, in like Mitra Sirix sort of flashbacks of when she was exiled. It kind of explores, if people remember this, kind of explores, those cutscenes explore the different Jedi masters and what their sort of take on was it. And it kind of, it does touch on that a bit, like how it was very difficult to get to a consensus on what to do
for them. Yeah, and some of them like carry guilt about, like, did we do the right thing?
Yeah.
Well, obviously when we get to the Mitra Sirix episode, that's what I've been leading towards and where we're going to go. So we'll see kind of what happens and kind of what morally questionable actions the council even decides to take. And what outcomes things like not engaging in the Mandalorian Wars would have.
Yeah.
Beyond that, who's your favorite? Who's your favorite Jedi Master?
Oh, man. You know, I definitely do like Atriss.
I was going to say that too.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were. Very cool character in the game. I don't know. Just they did a really good job with her. They made her just seem like this very sort of like defeated, but like kind of bitter Jedi who is like so devoted to the cause. But I don't know. Yeah. What about you? Also Atriss?
Yeah. I like her black and white morality.
Yeah.
I feel like, I guess we'll kind of save it. Yeah, Atriss is one of those characters that we're definitely going to come back and revisit.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to save all my thoughts for that episode. But I think there's something to be said for her stance, her very hardline stance. And she's a very interesting character because outwardly she like doubles down, but internally she's like questioning.
Yeah.
Which I think is very realistic for a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
But I do agree fundamentally. I am a very black and white person, so I do still agree with her general stances, although she does seem to be sympathetic with you should just follow the rules because the council ordered it, which can have some very dangerous outcomes if you just think like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's sort of you could get to the Nuremberg defense sort of like I was just following orders, right?
Yeah.
Where you don't really have like an internal moral compass. You just
do as
you're told. Yeah. I mean, to me, a close second is Master Vrook. I like the curmudgeon-y old man.
I don't like him.
Really?
For that reason, yeah.
No, I love it.
Maybe we're too similar.
I like his character. I think it's pretty cool. But
he's definitely not typical for something you'd expect for a Jedi Master.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with Master Vrook and Master Tokair, is that yes, they were like introduced in the video games, Knights of the Old Republic, but they also actually intersect quite a lot with the Knights of the Old Republic comic book series as well.
Yeah.
And they're quite present in some of those arcs, which the Knights of the Old Republic comics kind of deviate from the games. And then they like, well, we kind of mentioned this, I think, when we talked about Zane Carrick in his episode.
Yeah.
Where they'll kind of drop in these characters that, you know, like Revan does make an appearance, Alec or Malak makes an appearance.
Yeah.
Like these big names, Karth makes it, right? Like all these names, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously Master Tokair and Vrook are on that list, but they do have like they do interact with Zane character very directly in his arc. So
yeah, cool.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this introduction of characters, just laying the groundwork as we go into our next steps here.
Yeah. All right. On that note, I think we'll wrap it up there. I just want to remind everyone, if you have any questions or comments or criticisms, reach out to us. You can DM us on any of our social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Just search Star Lores. Also on Discord, you can also email us at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. And you can support the show on Patreon. So www.patreon.com/starlores. And for $3 a month, you can support the show. Beyond that, anything else I'm missing?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay, cool. Reach out to us. Follow us on social media. That helps. Share
rate
the episode.
And review.
Yeah, rate and review. Share the episodes. All that.
Tell all your friends.
Yeah.
Have a listening party. Sit down with them in a little circle.
Yeah. And definitely, like, if you're on a first date, talk all about...
highly encouraged.
Yeah. Talk all about this great Star Wars podcast.
Jordan and I are both married. We can guarantee it works.
Yeah. All right. Peace.